Neil is going to be joined by the moderator of this panel, Lisa Holton, who is now president of Classroom, Inc., which I hope she'll tell you a little bit about. But many of you know her from Disney and Scholastic, and I know her particularly well from Fourth Story Media, her wonderful transmedia startup venture, of which I was a small part. She will introduce her panelists, and we're on to a wonderful panel. Thank you.
Good afternoon. So I'm Lisa Holton. I'm the president of Classroom, Inc., and as Lorraine mentioned, for those of you who are saying, what the heck is she doing now, I'm just going to take a moment to tell you that Classroom, Inc. is a nonprofit. So our mission is to close the academic achievement gap, and we do that specifically by creating educational curriculum programs that we put into either they can go into an English class, they can go in after school, they can be used in a summer school program. They are literacy programs. They are often used for eighth graders who read at fourth grade level, sophomores who are reading at a fifth grade level. But we don't use books. We have a nonfiction library. But the way our students increase their reading is by reading in a virtual workplace simulation. So you become a banker, or you become an editor, or you become a sportscaster. And as you go through a virtual simulation, you have to read reports, you have to read dialogue with your colleagues, you have to actually pull up reference material, you have to decide whether to hire or fire people, and through all of those decision makings, we've shown over and over again they greatly increase their reading scores. For someone who spent their entire life in books and in that form of literacy, it is really eye-opening. And I have to tell you, we are in schools where none of us would walk in and say, really? Like, really? Can these schools exist in America? We are working with a lot of students who, you know what, wouldn't pick up a book and would feel really unsuccessful. And so it's a really interesting way of looking at reading. One more thing I'll just say, because I share this with Todd and Terry. So we created CD-ROMs and print materials for years. So thanks to a Gates grant, we just created our first web-based online virtual learning game for literacy. So we are right now grappling with a lot of the same issues, right? Which what Mike said, which is all of a sudden you're in a digital platform, you can go directly to teachers. Right, but that doesn't mean there's still not the school district and the superintendent and the principal and a whole bunch of other factors that you have to take into account. So it's a really wild and woolly time, right? So that leads us to our really exciting panelists here today. So I'm going to introduce both of them and then they'll come up one at a time. Todd Bruckus is the president of Capstone Digital. So under Capstone Digital, one of the most exciting and innovative new programs is Mayan Reader, which he'll tell you a lot about. It's amazing that it started in January 2011. They already have 8 million books online, but more importantly, they have 1.4 students reading in his program. Todd spent many years in educational technology at Plato, at WorldCom, and probably most importantly to me, he actually spent time as a teacher and a technology director, so he actually knows hands-on what those classrooms face. So he is joined by Terry Suter, who is one of the three founders of Brainhive. Brainhive is also a really exciting and very fast-moving online delivery system into the schools. She also serves as the vice president and marketing director and digital strategy for Learner. So basically, she's interesting because she's both wearing a publishing hat and wearing a distribution hat. Terry also has been in software ed tech for years. And in fact, Terry and Todd work together at Plato, so they know all of each other's trade secrets. So welcome. Todd, Terry, you want to go first? Okay, great.
Okay, black clicker. There's two clickers up here. I was told to grab the black one, and let's hope this works. I work in tech, and these darn things stump me every time. So thank you for having me and Todd. I think this is a really exciting time in the educational marketplace, especially as it relates to digital content and what all of you are interested in. Okay, right button, right, Todd? Oh, there we go. All right, well, good. I wanted to get to that slide. So I wanted to kind of start by spending a few minutes sharing with you what's happening in schools as it relates to digital. We spend a lot of time in the publishing market talking about the consumer market, even public libraries, and not a lot of time understanding what's going on in the school library market. So I wanted to share with you some interesting trends, what's going on. Ebooks in the school market is literally in its infancy. In terms of what's being spent out there, $42 million was spent on ebooks in schools in the United States last school year. And today, we know about 47% of school libraries have ebooks as part of their collections. That's growing. Another 25% of schools are going to be adding them this year. Middle schools are the fastest growing segment. Somebody earlier today talked about those middle grade novels for boys being kind of a hot. And we're definitely seeing that fast growth in the adoption of ebooks in the middle school. High schools were the first to get there, which is not surprising. And elementaries are kind of coming up in the rear, but that's growing too. 36% of elementary schools have ebooks today, and a big portion of that reason that they've been lagging is access to content. Having ebook content for the younger grades has been something that's definitely lagged in the market. So now that that's changing, we're going to see those trends change as well. The number of ebooks that schools have as part of their collections increased 83% last school year. Definitely a very fast and rapid pace of growth. High schools average 438 titles. And we definitely see that the e-reader, mobile, tablet use in schools is really hot. You can't read a daily e-newsletter from any of the ed tech publications without something being discussed around iPads, iPad minis, tablets. It's hot. iPads sold about just under 1 million units in schools just in the third quarter of 2012 alone. So that's definitely a driver around that adoption. And so what do we know about ebook adoption trends? What are the motivators and what are the barriers? Definitely schools want to keep up with the latest in technology. You know, kids and teachers are exposed to ebooks in their consumer lives and their everyday life. They don't have a lot of access to it in the classroom, in the school. And that's something that's definitely driving schools towards this adoption and wanting to keep up with what's the latest trends in technology and just educational trends and best practices. The Common Core that we keep hearing so much about drives the use of technology as part of the standards. It's something that schools have to start adopting. And providing content both in print and digital is an important aspect of that. There's a lot of attractiveness around ebooks and digital content too, just in terms of its portability, flexibility in the curriculum. It's not just contained to the confines of the school library anymore. An ebook goes across classrooms, it goes across school programs. It's not just a library product. However, there are definite barriers to ebook adoption in schools. Budget is definitely one of them and a big barrier, shouldn't be looked at lightly, but also complexity and access, just having good content to be able to purchase for schools in ebook format. So Brainhive was launched. We are a brand new company. We started in June of 2012, and we really ideated Brainhive out of this feedback and understanding of the school market about how do we meet this unique need around budgets, about access and complexity. They want to meet this growing ebook demand. They want to offer relevant digital content, take advantage of all the benefits that ebooks provide. But the purchasing models that are available for schools today are often really complex. They're very cost prohibitive, and that leaves schools oftentimes looking for other alternatives. So we launched Brainhive this summer to offer a solution that really breaks down the financial and the ebook access barriers for schools and really helps them with that shift to digital and start adopting digital in terms of what they have available to schools and their school libraries. So what do we do? So Brainhive, I'm going to break it down for you really quickly. So what do? We're an online ebook service for K-12 schools. We're dedicated to schools and school libraries. We offer schools unlimited access to what today is retails for about $150,000 ebook collection. We have 3,700 titles. We take a curated approach to the selection of those titles. We are not trying to be all things to all people, but really put good content, the most appropriate content for K-12, fiction, nonfiction, across the curriculum subjects. So we do curate that titled collection. We have 3,700 today and growing, as well, along with some downloadable activities, teaching guides, Common Core materials, as well as online access to accelerated reader quizzes for reading assessment. Membership is free for schools. You sign up for free as a K-12 school. There's no upfront investment. There's no long-term commitment. You can come on and off the platform at any time. And it's an on-demand service. So essentially, member schools get unlimited access to the 3,700 titles that we have available. And the school pays just a dollar. We call it Brainhive Buck. A dollar for every checkout. The school sets the checkout period. Maximum is 14 days, and that's what most schools select. So we bill them monthly based on their circulations, essentially. The big benefit to schools is that the schools are not taking that upfront investment risk with their limited budgets and selecting a set of ebooks and then hoping, crossing their fingers, that those were the right selections that their kids, their students, and teachers wanted to access. So basically what it does is it flips the model from a purchasing pre-selection model for titles in the school and in the library to a reader-driven model that's an on-demand, so very much like your pay-per-view at home. They only pay for what the kids and the teachers are reading. So we love that, and we've gotten great feedback around, you know, giving the school the opportunity to essentially rejuvenate and refresh their digital collection with 3,700 plus titles without that upfront investment, and they're just paying for what's actually circulating, what's actually reading, what's being read. In terms of the kids, we offer a very Goodreads-like experience for kids, obviously age-appropriate, but similar in terms of they can have friends within their school building, they can share what books they're reading, they can tailor the collection based on their interests, they can identify books as want to read, finished reading, on their bookshelf. So we put a lot of those types of social tools in there. There's a book club feature. So it's a very Goodreads-like experience, but designed for kids. And the business model, as I said, it's a rental. So revenue is basically derived for our publishing partners based on the volume of individual ebook checkouts across many hundreds of schools. See, I told you this thing is going to stump me every time. Very quickly, we have about 20 partners today, including Renaissance Learning, who's our partner for the AR quizzes. We really are, like I said, trying to develop a curated collection, so we want to make sure that we have a good broad mix of fiction and nonfiction. In the nonfiction, we have all the various curriculum categories and K-12. And so that's what we're aiming to do. That's what we've done so far, we think, very successfully, and we'd love to continue that process with additional publishers as well. In terms of marketing, how do we get to the market? So really, from a marketing perspective, we're focusing on two primary objectives. First is school enrollments. So we're driving, building that school enrollment, how many member schools we have on Brainhive, and then the second piece of it is around ebook circulation and usage. So we're taking a dual marketing approach. Primarily, it's a direct marketing play, and that's going to be a very different when Todd talks to you about his platform. We come at the school market with the same goals, but from two very different models and two very different sales and marketing approaches. With the same goals. So we're primarily a direct marketing play. We target in what's been working really successfully for us so far, and we've only been out for less than 6 months, so we're continuing to learn and evolve, but is the school librarian and the principal as the two primary decision makers at the building level. We just released earlier this month school district management functionality, so now we'll be expanding our marketing reach into that district level as well. Email marketing has worked really, really well for us, as well as telemarketing. So that's what we've been doing. Bottom line, before I turn it over to Todd, is just for all of you as publishers to understand that the school market, it's a huge market, and it's really in its infancy stages in terms of this digital and ebook adoption. There are about 110,000 to 120,000 schools, depending on who's counting, and that means 48.5 million prospective readers of your books. So when I talk to publishers, what do I tell them is the benefits? Why would they want to be in this market? Why do they want to consider this as a potential model? It's definitely low risk. We're all about trying to help you earn new revenue with content that you're already producing, ebooks that you're already developing or a part of your backlist. You're going to get those ebooks, that content, into a very underserved market niche, and it's incremental revenue for you on your existing ebooks. By the way, my philosophy and what I tell people, and I'm sure Todd will echo this, is as a publisher, putting my other hat on, you want your content on as many platforms and as many places as possible. Schools are not going to select just one platform. Generally speaking, they're going to have a few. So get your titles everywhere. also, you're going to benefit as a publisher in terms of getting that positive brand perception. There's been a lot of talk in the marketplace about school and library perceptions around what publishers have made available to them. We want to break down that barrier. So we definitely have gotten a lot of very positive buzz from the school community about what we're doing, our model, and the publishers that are part of that in terms of, you know, you're helping to solve an education need and getting this content, great content, in the hands of readers. So it's a PR win for you, and I will mention that you're also getting your books. It's a marketing opportunity for you. So these kids, these readers, these teachers are also consumers. And lastly, you're going to get access to some great quantitative data and really understanding how your books are being read and for how long and et cetera. So I'm going to hand it over to Todd, and he's going to tell you about a completely different business model with Mayan, but again with the similar goals.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay, so it's been 1 year since I was here last, and thank you again, Lorraine and Mike's and Jess in the back for allowing me to speak again. It's been a great year. We've doubled the revenues on Mayan, doubled the books, not quite 8 million, but 8 million readings of our books on the platform, doubled the number of kids, doubled the number of schools, and more than doubled our number of publishers on our platform. It's been an exciting year. Since our launch in January 2011, we're coming up on our 2-year anniversary, so we're very excited, and thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to go pretty quickly here, but the key piece of the education technology trend where my whole career experience has been is really that this is about a $7.76 billion market, up from $7.5 in 2009 and 10. And about 38% of that is instructional support. Those are things like assessments and curricular supports, student information systems, library automation systems. And then 36% being content. So the education market is still heavily weighted on content, though content did decrease in this past year. But as many products and companies like Brainhive and like Mayan, we're blending this model of just content, but content plus assessment plus platform plus integration. So it's an exciting market, and I think probably Peter's explanation of the demand and the discoverability is one of the number one reasons for being in the education market. If that's what is driving kids to your content, the education market is really the opportunity. And it goes beyond seeing a book spine in a library. And that's what we're going to talk about with both of our platforms here today. So obviously the stakes are enormous. We know these statistics. It's horrendous if kids don't read. And schools are still in a pain point with reading. Schools are all across the nation struggling with reading. And states are still calculating prisons to be built based on reading scores. Traditional content platforms, I think this digital transformation, I think what Dominique shared earlier, what Storia, what other platforms have talked about today, are really going to help push us into a new model for getting kids to really love reading. And, you know, the old world of just having wait lines in the library or having kids not receive books with their own taste, we've heard a lot about that today, about that personalized, about that connection to content, and how to integrate that into the curriculum. I think connecting to Neil's conversation today, is we have to be publishers that are mindful of the curriculum process when we're in the education market. We have to look at Common Core very carefully, not just to stamp a seal on it that says Common Core, but to actually connect it to the instructional practices that transform the education experience. And I think digital can do this uniquely, especially as it blends into these metadata initiatives as well. So here's a little bit of pain point on our product background.
Based off of our student data, we realize that a lot of our students are scoring less proficient in using informational text. And as you know, with the Common Core, the main emphasis is on informational text. So Mayan just gives us more resources that the kids actually enjoy using.
So our approach is really fivefold, and I'm going to go pretty quickly for the sake of time. It's about personalization. It's about content from great partners. It's about access, unlimited, site license, model access. Very different from other models you may have heard about. It's all you can eat. It's the full buffet. It's ready for you and available for you. It's collaboration. It's that connected to community to the teacher, to the home, and to the student, and to their peers. And then it's about success. It's about metrics and data that are going to drive students to their own personal growth in reading. So that's our five pillars. The way Mayan knows kids individually is we have an interest inventory. We connect them to a Lexile-based approach where we find out what Lexile that student is, and then we recommend books to them. We connect them to their interests as well as their Lexiles, and then other books that they have liked. So we're a little bit of Amazon, a little bit of Netflix, and a little bit of our own special sauce, if you will, for personalization. Here's a clip a little bit on personalization.
Whenever you can get motivating, engaging content that really matches what kids are interested in reading and matches them at their reading level, amazing things happen. And one of the greatest things about Mayan and what it can do for kids is it can instill a passion for reading and a love for reading.
So, yeah, that love for reading is really key. And as the student, I think that point about choice that was made earlier in the presentation, when kids choose, when they get to choose, when they get to see their own choices come about and then share them and get excited with other kids, that's the platform around Mayan that we built with personalization. In terms of content, we have over 4,000 enhanced digital books. 70% of our library is nonfiction. It's a little bit of a different, maybe what we've been hearing today, but we are an educational program, and we're really focused on the nonfiction. We are pre-K and even birth through high school. We're adding more and more high school publishers into our platform, and we're seeing more and more high school adoptions about blending digital content into the curriculum and into the English courses that are taught. All of our books all books that we have under 1,000 Lexiles have audio recording, so everything has human actor-led recording, including highlighting dictionary, click on the word dictionaries, and all the tools necessary to support the struggling reader as well as the on-grade level reader. In addition to the capstone titles, and by the way, I just want to prop up both Adam Lerner and Bob Coughlin, who've had the guts to invest in companies and building companies underneath their businesses and saying, this is a really opportunity, and maybe it's just our Minneapolis blood, Terry, here that we've been given this great opportunity. But we've added lots of publishers, and Dominique Sourcebooks just came on board last week, so we're thrilled with that. We're adding more publishers, and our model is very similar. We add publishers into the opportunity, and there's bundled opportunities to package and prepare a direct sales force who goes out and packages up a perfect selection of titles that are blended for that school district's needs. And there's some pretty exciting implementation across the nation. So in terms of beyond content, it's about access. Our model is unlimited access for the student who has a subscription through the school. It's not inexpensive. It's a large subscription. They are subscribing to a large digital library, and they're using it across the board. They're using it in their pre-K programs. They're using it in their after-school programs, their special ed programs, their English courses. Our goal is to get so sticky that they write the content of our publishers and ourselves into the curricula, and we start to replace many of the old, tired textbook models that are going towards the anthology model or towards the old way of thinking in terms of language arts and getting them into new practices of nonfiction, fiction content, dynamic content that kids can choose and then make the curriculum all that more interesting.
Because our students are really into the information age and technology, students really want to be on the computer, and you'll see that they spend more time reading when it is something that they enjoy doing. And our students are really enjoying the program.
It's very user-friendly, it's easy to access, and as we're learning more about the program as well, it's just been a really nice process to see kids reading at their level.
And it's so native to what a student or a child will do on a computer on a day-to-day basis. It really syncs up with their world and their language. And so that is incredible to watch a student just get on and start reading.
So we're up for our renewal in Hillsborough County, Florida. It's a district-wide implementation. We have lots of district-wide implementations. We go to the superintendent. We go to the curriculum supervisors. We go to assessment coordinators. We really connect with the whole district with our direct sales force, our exclusive sales force. And it's exciting. They're seeing amazing amounts of reading happening. They're watching it. It's becoming the language of the superintendent to now say that we're reading online. We're getting kids to read online. Clearly, collaboration is part of this. We partner with all parts of the education institution. We provide professional services. We align their curriculum. And then we also give them measurement and data, new data. And really, for the reality is that platforms like ours provide new data to school districts to make decisions about what's working in their schools. With the Lexile improvement scores, with trajectory reporting, I'm not going to play the video because we're out of time, but there's a whole, on our website, you can see more about that. But why are we working with other publishers? Clearly because the content opportunity is huge. The content opportunity to connect kids with the right books at the right level in their choice and to grow those books to become seamless in the education industry. It's clearly new revenue streams. We have a dedicated sales and marketing approach, a little bit different than the direct marketing, and metrics to prove that it's working. So thank you very much.
So since we have very limited time, I think we should just throw it. Sorry. Since we have very limited time, I think we should just throw it right out to the audience. Does anybody have any questions for Todd or Terry? Yeah.
So I'll take the first shot at it. We're seeing a variety of approaches. The BYOD, the bring your own device movement, is heavy. The challenge with IT departments is there's over 400 different unique devices and growing every day. So they're struggling with a lot of that. Android, iPad access, we provide that, but it is a varying source of challenge. Many districts are buying large initiatives from LA Unified, Tampa, Florida, other places are doing large implementations.
Can I ask you one question, though? Would you say that the majority of your program is still used via computer as opposed to tablet?
Yeah, we're about 59% PC, 22% Mac, and the rest is mobile, and iPad leads the way.
Right. So basically, of your total use right now, you'd say all tablets are like 25%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The most common e-reader in a school is still the computer.
Lorraine?
Terry, what happens when they bump up against if it's $1 a book, they must have something to max out?
Yeah, what we do is we allow the school to set their budget. The administrator has a really cool dashboard, so he or she can always be monitoring their usage against their budget. They can ramp it up, they can ramp it down. If they hit their limit within the month when they, you know, for their monthly limit, what happens is students still have access to the full platform. If they try to check out a new book, they get a very friendly message that says, please check with your librarian. You'll have the title available soon. Anything that's already checked out, they still have full access to.
I have one more question, actually, to both of you, but Todd especially. You mentioned something really important, which is you're actually trying to really encourage teachers to use your program in ways that will actually push out a lot of textbook, right? So, I mean, not push out textbook, but
well, here I sit in McGraw-Hill's.
All right, integrate integrate them into curriculum.
I have good friends in the textbook industry, but they all know the challenge. We work with textbook publishers at times to realize that it's about text, nonfiction text that's blended between fiction and nonfiction together. Great opportunities right there where you write a textbook 5 years ahead of time and you're still trying to market and sell that. The blend and the opportunity for fresh content, ready access, it's not easy to blend into the education environment, but if you can get a few lesson plans followed by a few superintendents watching data reports followed by real improvement in student achievement, it can get pretty sticky.
Great. Any other questions? Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the whole crux of the program. Teachers can recommend books based on what they're seeing in their chart of growth. And every child has their own chart of growth on their Lexile growth. And every teacher and every administrator can see. In Miami-Dade this summer, They had a 92-point Lexile improvement in 5 weeks, and that was 4,800 students. The superintendent knows that, and he knows that what's going on there, and he's observing this pilot and hopefully purchasing.
Okay.